The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Welcome to the BS Report, a hazy Monday here in Southern California, and a hazy week for the sport of boxing, which has increasingly few fans. Two of them are on the line right now, myself and our friend Cousin Sal. Cousin Sal,
I don't know, it might just be one.
You're out?
I don't know, man. This is as bad a screw job as it gets.
So the consensus seems to be that people cannot for the life of them figure out how the judges arrived at this verdict. I watched the whole fight. I never at any point thought Bradley even had a remote chance to win. I actually felt bad for him in the middle rounds because he just had no power at all. He couldn't keep Pacquiao off him. Pacquiao could do whatever he want. Pacquiao was fighting 1 minute per round and dominating. And when they said 115 to 113 with the first card, even though they said Pacquiao won that guy's card, even the 115, I did like a triple take. I'm like, what? How could anyone even say this was 115-113? Then Bradley wins the second card, and it was like, all right, now this is something's going on here. And then he wins the fight, and it just was probably the most speechless I think I've ever been after a boxing decision. How about you?
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing like it either. Like everything else you watch, any other sport, the action's right in front of you. But the moment you wait for a judge's decision to tally up what you've already seen. It's a weird thing in general, but maybe we should talk about the fact that we had money on Pacquiao, which, whatever. I mean, that's fine, but I've lost 1,000 bets. God willing, I'll lose 1,000 more. But, when you lose a bet, it's like opening a credit card bill and seeing that your wife ran it up on you in the month. You're like, oh man, that just really sucks. But, This was like in addition to the bill, the credit card company, like Visa, added a picture of your wife servicing the situation. It's like, oh my God, I can't trust anything now. I mean, it was just awful, just awful.
See,
I had it 10-2 when I watched it the first time. I had it 10-2, and then I rewatched it yesterday. Honestly, I had it 10-2, and I was like, only because I felt bad for Bradley, I gave him a couple of close rounds. And then I watched it yesterday. I'm like, all right, let me cool off a little bit. And I gave him every round I possibly could, and I still had it 8-4.
Yeah.
Did you watch it again yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah.
You could potentially say he won 4 rounds. I mean, it's tough because watching on TV versus being in person, I know there's just a difference. But even if you gave him every borderline round, I still don't know how you get to 7. That's
no
the part
way.
I don't get. It's just, it seems like impossible. Like, you can't tell me that Pacquiao only won 5 rounds in that fight.
Right.
And then, I mean, there's just a lot going on here, but it's never made sense that there were just 3 judges for a boxing match because it can't be that expensive to hire judges, right? I mean,
well, I was thinking that too. I was thinking that too. And then make it 5 judges or just, you know, make them younger or something. I mean, 2 of the judges were like 71 and 74 years old. The other judge is a chick and which, whatever. But you know what? This fight was fixed. It doesn't matter if you have 40 judges, 41 judges. Don't you feel it was fixed? Do you think they were paid?
Here's another thing I was thinking. All right, so let's say we have 6 judges, right? 6 judges. That's a nice sample size. The 7th judge, they go American Idol style. The public votes. The public gets a vote. 1 of the 7.
That's fine.
Even that would make more sense than just having 3 guys ringside. You know, yeah. I just think Barnwell did a nice piece for us today on Grantland just about the statistical odds of something getting screwed up. And as long as you even add two more judges, the odds of this getting screwed up decreases significantly, which is an important wrinkle.
No, I know, but I think we're getting away from the big thing here, which is these judges were paid. And I'm really not much for conspiracy theories. I know they still think Jerry Jones killed Kennedy or whatever, but I think these judges were paid. I don't think you could have 128 title fights. You could judge that many and be off by 7 points in a fight like this. I just don't think it's possible. And I don't think you could give two rounds to Bradley, both of which he landed 9 punches, when Pacquiao landed like 27 and 22 and was dominating with power shots. I just don't think it's a screw up. I'm sorry. And when you do the math of what's to come in the next few months, it all makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, you know, here's where the fact that we don't have stats during boxing fights really. Oh, wait, we totally have stats. Pacquiao landed 100 more power punches.
100 more power, almost 100 more just overall punches. You want to go by who was worse for where, he wins that. Ring championship, whatever that, you know, I think he controlled the action. How did Bradley win this fight? How did he win 5 rounds, let alone 7 of this fight?
And the only way you could, like, if the fourth round had been reversed and Bradley, that had been Bradley's big round and he had, like, almost, it seemed like Pacquiao was going to, you know, get knocked down there or whatever, then maybe you could say, all right, well, at least Bradley, you can't point to anything Bradley did in this fight other than the fact that Pacquiao backed off the last couple rounds because he had dominated the fight and just didn't want to get caught.
Right. And we've seen fights like that. We've seen, like, you know, there are fights where it's like 7-5, where you have a guy 7-5. Like, I think I had like Holmes over Spinks both times, 7-5, Spinks, and De La Hoya, Trinidad, and like, you know, and that stinks. But when it starts getting to 8-4 and 9-3, that's bad. That's just, you know, you want to quit the sport. You want to quit watching.
Yeah, and this, you know, this wasn't like Hagler-Leonard where people, you know, there's cases to be made for. Like, I heard one of the judges was saying how, look, Bradley made Pacquiao look bad. Pacquiao missed a lot of punches. Like, Leonard made Hagler look bad. And that's why I thought Leonard won that fight, because Hagler fought a really bad fight. He kept missing. He just wasn't in control. And Leonard, I felt like, did just enough to steal the fight. Bradley, I didn't feel like Bradley made Pacquiao look bad.
Yeah.
It felt like he couldn't inspire Pacquiao to really fight for 3 minutes per round because Pacquiao was so superior to him that it just was no contest. And he couldn't hurt him. None of his punches even seemed to faze Pacquiao even by like 1%. I can't remember him getting tagged once, 12
rounds. He was never in trouble, Pacquiao. And I know you judge fights round by round, but at the end, if you ask, was he ever in trouble? Like, no, no way, not even close. I just, you know, look, we could analyze it, or we could just agree. Like, what percent do you think the judges were paid off? Like, I put it at 100. I'm telling you.
Well, if you're talking conspiracy, then you need to have a smoking gun for the conspiracy. There needs to be a reason that they would have done this. And in this case, it seems like there would be two possible reasons. One is that gamblers got involved and convinced two of the judges to vote for Bradley. The odds did move down in Vegas for whatever reason. I mean, that could be a coincidence, whatever. The other reason is because he had signed with Top Rank. Rafe Bartholomew, covered this theory in his column today. Bradley had signed with Top Rank. They had a November pay-per-view for Pacquiao. If it was Bradley versus Pacquiao, the sequel, then Top Rank controls, you know, both fighters in that fight, they get all the money versus having to go outside the circle, deal with another promotion or whatever. That's a pretty compelling reason to kind of fix a fight.
Two things happened that I don't think I've ever seen before. One is the winning boxer asked if he won. When asked if he won the fight, said, "I don't know. I'm gonna have to check the tape." One of you ever even heard anything resembling? They're like, yeah, I won the fight. Just watch it. The judges made the right call. This is all sour grapes, you know. That's what they say. They don't say, I don't know. Let me look it over. I really have to think about it a little more. Secondly, how does he have the rematch date in recollection so far in front of his brain? Like, what professional wrestlers aren't trained to have the rematch match date instilled in their brain as much as Timothy Bradley was. Like, it all seems so set up for this. And really, like, it does, and people are like, well, this makes the Mayweather fight, you know, it takes some luster off it. I don't think so. I mean, they weren't fighting in November anyway. They might not fight ever. And, you know, if Pacquiao goes out there and knocks the crap out of Bradley in November like he should, then, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be, you know, there's going to be just as many people wanting to see Mayweather-Pacquiao as there are now or 2 weeks ago.
We can both agree that it's weird that the odds dropped this much for Bradley.
Yeah.
We talked about it the night before. We were talking that it had drifted down to Pacquiao minus 400. Neither of us could understand it. The main thing, the red flag for me with Bradley was that he had 28 fights, only 12 knockouts.
Right.
So when you have that few knockouts, because you figure like your first half of your career when you're rising up, you're fighting a bunch of tomato cans. You haven't even knocked out 50% of your guys. That means you have no power whatsoever. And that's right. What we saw in that fight. And I just don't think you're going to beat Pacquiao under any circumstances if you don't have power. So it was weird to me that Pacquiao was 4-1. Now I'm looking at the Pacquiao's last. When was the last time Pacquiao fought a great fight?
Where he was great or the fight was great?
Where he was great.
When he knocked out Hatton, I don't know. Was there one after that or, I'm not sure. That might have been the one. It might have been like 4 years ago.
I mean, maybe people were in on this whole Pacquiao thing. Maybe Pacquiao isn't the same guy that he was.
Maybe... No, he probably isn't. I think he could have knocked him out in a couple of those rounds, but, you know, he won that fight. That's all you have to do. You only have to beat who's in front of you, right?
Well, let me ask you this. Is it possible Pacquiao was a knowing conspirator in this thing, and that he knew that whatever happened, he wasn't going to win the fight?
Well, I think that's less likely. And, you know, I was thinking that in the beginning because he wasn't as pissed off as you or I or anyone watching that fight was.
No.
You know, and that's always like, what are you doing? Get mad, you know, get angry. When a guy's about to be accused of murder and you didn't do it, stand up in the courtroom and scream a little bit, you know?
Right.
And then I think it hits them. It's like, well, I'm going to make $50. I feel like I was undefeated anyway. I'm going to make $50 million in the rematch. So,
right.
But fighting, I don't think he was in on it. Yeah.
He's going to make $50 million fighting a guy that he knows he's superior to.
Right.
He has no chance whatsoever. Well, the other thing I was thinking was maybe the plan all along for whoever, and who knows who was in on it, was to have Bradley win this fight. And that they assumed that with the styles, that it was going to be at least close enough that we'd have maybe a Leonard Hagler scenario where it was just close enough you could have made the case for Bradley. But then Bradley gets hurt in the fourth round.
Yeah.
He sprains his ankle and fractures his foot. And from that point on, no threat whatsoever to Pacquiao, who then beats him up for the next three, four rounds and then takes the last couple off. Bradley kind of, that injury kind of screwed that up because now it wasn't a close fight and then they're like, oh crap. Now if you're assuming this is a conspiracy, oh crap, what do? Do we still go through with it? There's no way people buy it now. Ah, screw it. Let's do it anyway. And
yeah.
At the very least, what would happen if Pacquiao won one card and then the other two judges ruled that it was a draw? Then it's a draw, right? Draw majority decision.
We would have gotten some of our parlay money back, that's for sure. draw a majority decision. Yeah,
That's the amazing thing to me is that they didn't just say let's do it a draw.
Right.
Well, two of us will do a draw, and that way it won't be that suspicious.
Yeah, not as suspicious, but not as enticing now to watch the rematch. And by the way, that is the worst part of this whole thing is that I'm buying the rematch, and so are you.
Oh my God.
Well, maybe, yeah, you are.
I do wonder if they should refund the people who spent $65 for the HD, whatever. I know they should refund my bet, but
it looks like the commission. Really, for those of you who bet this fight legally, class action this thing up. Try to get it because it doesn't really get worse than this. And in this country, at least, I mean, did you feel like you were in a foreign country at a point? Like, oh, yeah, this is where elections are overturned for no reason and weird right. things like this happen all the time. But
well, you and I, we talked after the fight, and the verdict was so bad that I think I actually said to you that, oh, it'll be fine. The next morning they're going to wake up and overturn it.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, that didn't happen. There's no overturning at all.
They're showing no remorse, the boxing commission or whoever. Two rounds where he landed 9 punches, and 2 judges gave Bradley both those rounds. Are you kidding me?
It's unbelievable. I would like to get those judges together to score other famous sports movie fights and real fights in the history of boxing. See what
that's a good idea. That's
see
a good
where
idea.
They fell. I think they would have scored. Balboa wins the first Creed fight, I think, on Dwayne Ford's card. Whatever. So one of those judges was 74 years old.
I think the one who had it, 174, 171. I think the one who had Pacquiao winning 115, 113 was 74. And also, I think he was in on the picks too, because if he has it 119, 111, like everyone else, then it makes you think, you know, like, the fact that he kept it close, like you're now wondering, wow, maybe it was close, but I'll tell you what they have to do to fix a fight. They can't have all 3 broadcasters and Howard Letterman and, you know, they can't have everybody saying Pacquiao won easily. They should have paid off Howard Letterman. If he kept that close, this would have been less of a thing.
And it wasn't even, I mean, they went well beyond that. Like, they were saying, they were complimenting Bradley the last 2 rounds for still fighting hard, even though he'd already lost. Bradley's corner picked him up after the fight, and Lampley had some derisive comment about, well, I guess this is Bradley's. They feel like it was his one chance to be carried by his cornermen after a main event.
Right.
And then he ends up winning it. I agree with you. Pacquiao seems like he should have. I know, you know, he's definitely kind of an odd duck. He's a religious guy, right? Maybe he's just serene all the time. I don't know what his state of mind is. It's really strange to me that you could fight a prize fight where your job is to try to punch the other guy and you're putting your life on the line and you want to win. You're obviously a competitive person, that your reaction to that decision would be what his reaction was. It was almost like he knew what the decision was going to be.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just the exhaustion or just the fact that he's stunned like you said, maybe he's just like a good person. He was about, congratulating Bradley more than anything, but it didn't seem to match up. Freddie Roach should have been upset too. I don't think you saw last week. Freddie Roach trained a guy, Coyote, who fought Antonio Tarver. And Tarver won about 4 rounds, and they called it a draw. And Freddie Roach, like, got screwed again, and same thing. Like, he didn't say anything. Very, very strange what goes on.
Well, was this worse than Roy Jones in the 88 Olympics?
I remember this being worse. And like I said, we had money on it, so that factors in. But I don't know if I saw that fight twice, but I don't know.
That one was just clearly rigged because of where it was and the whole thing. The worst decision that I can remember just from being totally confused and just stunned and shocked was when Leonard got the draw against Tommy Hearns in their rematch in 1980.
That was bad. What about Chavez Whitaker? That was pretty bad too, right?
Yeah, that was pretty bad. But at least like that one didn't jump out to me the way that, because I was a huge Leonard fan, and when that fight ended, it was just, you know, devastated. Leonard had lost. Hearns, because the Hearns Leonard fight, the original fight, was one of my favorite fights ever. I was so mad that Hearns kind of had flipped the script on him. And then when he got the draw, like, even I was horrified. I was a Leonard fan.
Right.
It's like, well, this is terrible.
There's not too many that you remember that are 8-4, 9-3, 10-2 that you had them and your guy lost. Like, this, I think, falls squarely right there. And it's a shame. It really is. And we got off to a good start. Like, you know, when there was that delay, when Pacquiao had to stretch his calves or whatever, Kellerman's talking about the Grantland. He gave you a Grantland plug. I was like, oh, this is great. This is going to be a great night. You heard that, right?
I was very excited. You're thinking like, all right, this is pretty weird with this calf thing. You know, what if for some reason, I was thinking of Michael Chang in the French Open that year when he was cramping up and he could barely walk. If Pacquiao was in that situation in the fight where he's like bending over and he's stretching his calf as he's trying to fight but he seemed fine. I mean, if anything, I think, you know, maybe that's why he didn't like go full born on Bradley, because I think he was trying to protect himself a little bit. There's no reason to.
Well, and it's that, and it's this other stupid psychological thing where I think if he feels if he beats these guys up bad enough, Floyd is going to back off even more than he already has.
This is one of your theories. You like this theory.
I think so. I mean, why else would he want to hang around with these guys where, you know, he's got them stumbling and, you know, they're fighting on broken feet and everything, like, you know, put them away. But I think some of these guys purposely don't show off. Because, ironically, they're less marketable if they win.
Yeah, and that's a really good point about Pacquiao. Like, if this is somebody, you know, in the HBO telecast, they were talking about this is the fighter in the 12th round. They're just gushing. This is the fighter of our generation. He, last 8 rounds of that fight, he's fighting a guy with no power, has a fractured foot.
Yeah.
And doesn't knock him out. Or doesn't knock him down. Isn't relentless. The guy was clearly fighting differently after the foot thing happened.
We talked about it. If Pacquiao had knocked him down in one of those rounds, in one of the 6 rounds, he could have knocked him down. And I thought he still loses by a point on 2 of the judges' cards.
Right. It would have been 115-114.
Right.
So, yeah, I think Pacquiao, I think he takes a big hit regardless, just because, you know, Mayweather was so brilliant in his last fight. And just in general, I used to think Pacquiao could beat Mayweather. And about a year ago, that started a shift for me. And now I just think Mayweather, I think he beats Pacquiao easily.
I think he's slicker. I think he's bigger. That's the kind of guy you think would beat Pacquiao. You know, I always thought would be, you know. But
right.
I also think this would be an unsatisfying fight anyway. I'm at that point where, you know, it'd be about 7-5, maybe Mayweather, and whatever. Neither one of them went for it. I just thought I think it would be hype.
While we're talking about conspiracies that can never be proven.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out why Pacquiao would be so willing to just kind of roll over and let this happen. One, obviously the rematch money that he's going to get.
Yeah.
Two, what if there was truth to some of his PED stuff? And what if somebody goes to him before the fight and says, look, you're going to go along with this, and here's why. And shows him some sort of evidence of something that Pacquiao did something over the past 5 years that he shouldn't have.
Wow.
And maybe Pacquiao, maybe they're all in. You know, I love conspiracies. I'm still talking about the JFK assassination 50 years later. Maybe Pacquiao was in on it.
Maybe it was. It would be easiest to fix just by approaching the judges and saying, hey, as long as this clown stays on his feet, let's keep it close and give him the slight nod at the end.
And you know, the other thing I was thinking was, there's only one person in the last 20 years that we know definitely fixed the fight. And he actually failed trying to fix it. And that was Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction. Maybe Marcellus Wallace was involved.
Where is he? I think he's in L.A. somewhere with some redneck.
Maybe he emerged from Zed's basement and finally figured out how to fix a fight correctly.
He couldn't fix it. Yeah.
So you think, is this good or bad for boxing that everybody is horrified and saying that this is the end of boxing? If boxing has shown anything over the past 50 years, it's that no matter how horrible something is, people always come back.
I think it's terrible, and I think it's terrible right now. But I also think if it could map out just how they wanted it. If Manny comes back and kicks the crap out of Bradley in November, like I said, I think just as many people want to see him fight Mayweather in March than they will. So and then this will have been forgotten. This will be chalked up to a bad decision. Whereas Bob Arum is like clearly behind this whole thing, even though he's putting on a show. But I think it'll work out for Bob.
Bob Arum did a nice job of throwing everyone off the scent right after. Oh, this is terrible. That's the worst decision I've ever seen. Everyone's even Bob Arum's upset.
He's such a crook. He stands to make so much money the more he can make it like it was a bad decision.
Here's one last point I want to make. If Obama has an election coming up, he's already positioned himself as a sports fan.
Mm-hmm.
There is no better time for him to get involved with sports in a real presidential way than right now. And for him to come out and say, you know what? I'm a boxing fan. I'm a sports fan. That was horrible. I don't know what's going on with boxing now, but boxing is just a broken sport. It's corrupt. I don't trust anybody. It needs somebody in charge. I am making this my mission to come up with somebody who's appointed to boxing who will try to fix this sport because it's broken. Everybody would be like, Obama, yeah!
I'm with you.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, first of all, it's a great idea anyway for him to do that. Second of all, with the election coming up, kind of a cool way to connect with sports fans a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's the guy who's trying to fix boxing. Maybe I'll vote for him again.
Well, how is it? It's definitely not a negative to put something like that on your platform.
No. You know? No, Obama, if he was smart, would try to position somebody to not just try to fix boxing, but, you know, get involved with concussions. Basically, my old joke about hiring a sports czar, you actually do it. You hire a sports czar. This guy's in charge of these different things that are, you know, the real problems with sports right now, and that's the guy who's appointed to try to help it.
I agree. And you know what? It goes hand in hand with his health care plan because I almost had a stroke listening to that decision. And I know you almost did too, so.
Well, you know, last thing, the biggest loss of that night other than in our wallets was Larry Merchant not being involved, because I really think Larry Merchant would have totally snapped and it would have been like Michael Douglas in Falling Down, where he just goes into the ring and he tries to punch Bob Arum, and I just think he would have lost his mind.
I missed him for sure. He would have been good. It was a terrible sports weekend, right? It was like,
yeah.
I mean, you had obviously the Celtics, Red Sox getting swept, Mets getting swept by me, and then this, and we just need football to roll back around again.
Well, Saturday on paper had so much promise. You had this horse going for the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
Horse gets hurt. You had potentially the Kings winning the Stanley Cup. Now, I guess the fact that the Devils won was good, but if there was ever a game to go into like triple overtime until 2 a.m, it was that game. You know, just for a fun standpoint. Then the Celtics Heat had so much promise, and then the Celtics just went ice cold last 8 minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
all right. Well, that's sad, but let's switch gears and let's give out a winner. For once in our lives, let's give out a winner on this podcast. And that's Oklahoma City in 5-8-1 and Oklahoma City in 6-3-1. And I know both aren't going to happen, but one.
I like Oklahoma City in 6. It makes me nervous that almost everybody likes them though.
Yeah, but they're better. They're going to embarrass this team, I think. Don't you think there'll be that one LeBron game where he gets it together, probably game 3, but after that, I just think they're a much better version of the Heat.
Yeah, I'm still sorting out my feelings on it, but I do think from a speed standpoint, it's going to be such a jolt for Miami to go from those Boston, you know, the walk it up Boston guys, basically Rondo is a one man fast break, and you know, they're playing in a series against Michael Petras and Keon Dooling and Greg Steensma and Ryan Hollins.
Yeah.
And now you're going against this team that is, you know, Derek Fisher's their worst player in their top 8. And even he played pretty well in the San Antonio series, but Durant can go head to head against LeBron. I think Westbrook is going to be a real issue for them.
Mm-hmm. I actually think the Celtics would have put up a better fight than Miami's about to. But I've been wrong about these things.
Well, here's the thing. Basketball is pretty simple. Most of the time, almost all of the time, whoever has the best player wins the series. And that's just the way it is.
Uh-huh.
And if LeBron is the best player in this series, I think Miami's going to win. If Durant can match LeBron, be better than him, or play him to a stalemate, you know, whatever, I think Miami's in trouble, because the dirty secret about that Celtics Heat series is that Dwayne Wade had a bad series.
Yeah.
And it reached a point by game seven, I was rooting for him to take 20 footers and I was rooting for him to take shots away from LeBron. And anytime he tried to go one on one, I was happy. You know, the best way to judge a team is by when they're playing your team and you're thinking, I hope these guys do this. And I wanted Dwayne Wade to shoot that entire game seven. And, you know, I think that's a real issue for Miami. They don't have – it's not a case of them having two of the best four players in the world anymore because Wade's not playing at that level anymore.
No, they don't win if Bosch doesn't come back, I don't think. But, you know, out of anything that could happen in this series, the thing I'd be most shocked at is if Miami sweeps those three at home. I just don't see that. And even if Oklahoma City splits that one, you know, I think they win the first two. But even if they go down 3-2 coming home – That's a win.
Yeah, it looks pretty good for Oklahoma City. And, you know, then you think about how Miami could add home court advantage in this series and gave away some games in March.
It was one game difference, right?
Yeah, and Miami really blew some games that they could have won. And Oklahoma City has a legit home court advantage. Miami does not. But it's Oklahoma City's a tough place to play. Now, you know, Boston's a tough place to play, too. LeBron went in there and it became a serial killer in game six and murdered everybody. But the great thing about this is LeBron versus Durant, just those guys going head-to-head. That's, if you're a basketball fan, that's just – it's the dominant storyline. It's the best thing about this series. So rare do you see the two – you know, probably the two best players in the league, same position, being able to go head-to-head. It's fantastic. Love it.
It's going to be fun.
I'm going. You're going tomorrow, right? Right?
No. Oh, yeah. You're going to media day, right? Wait, when is that? Is that today?
No, Oklahoma City. I thought you were going.
No, I'm not going to go.
Oh.
No.
Oh, I had a room at the Haunted Hotel for you.
No, you deal with that crap yourself.
Right.
I might be buying into that. But let me just plug. Jimmy Kimmel Live has primetime NBA shows for games 1 and 2 and 3, all of them. Before or after the game, depending on where you live on the East or West Coast. David Spade tomorrow, and on Thursday it's Joel McHale, and I have a hidden camera bit going in Thursday's primetime show as well.
So beautiful. We recommend Oklahoma City to win in 6-3-1 odds, and since we both like that, then I would urge America to stay away because we always lose.
Yeah, go the other way then. Miami in 6 is 7-1. So there you go.
Anything but Oklahoma City at 6. All right, Cousin Sal, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Billy, good job.
Good job by you too. All right, let's go to beautiful Hartford, Connecticut. On the line, he can't do his complex litigation. This is John because we changed our phone system and he has to answer first. Johnny, I didn't want to live a lie.
You know, this is like behind the looking glass here. This is how the sausage gets made.
Neither of us are good enough actors to have pretended to ad-lib the complex litigation. This is John.
This is the BS report behind the music.
Johnny, cocky Yankee fan is back.
Yeah, you know, I sent out that tweet, and it's funny because I don't even really have any animosity towards the Mets, but, you know, I always hear about, and I think really you have to live in New York and be a New Yorker to really experience the full Yankee Mets venom, such as it is, which I didn't even really know existed until a few years ago. But
yeah,
I think the Mets fan, it's more directed from the Mets fan to the Yankees fan because they have a little bit of an inferiority complex. But, you know, they always talk about the varsity and the JV, and after the sweep and sort of an amazing comeback because the Yankees looked really dead all day yesterday. So when they came back and won, I was giddy with excitement, I guess. So I just couldn't resist tweaking the Mets fan for no apparent reason.
You said that the varsity usually beats the JV. It was
just
an assassination of the Mets fans.
Apparently, I was corrected on Twitter that the varsity normally beats the JV, except in the Mighty Ducks 3. I have to admit that I missed that award-winning film. I haven't seen that one, but I guess the JV must beat the varsity somehow in that one.
That's the plot of Mighty Ducks 3?
Apparently.
Is Estevez?
To some of my Twitter followers.
Is Estevez in Mighty Ducks 3?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Back. Mighty Ducks 3, the grab for cash.
Yeah. Mighty Ducks 3, you're paying in cash, right? No check.
So the Yankees rolled through the Mets, and Andy Pettit, after his year-long retirement, I think he's my age, he's your age, he's somewhere between your age and my age.
He's in his early 40s. I think he's a little bit younger than us, like a year or so. I think he's like 39 or 40.
best friends with Roger Clemens, who's currently serving a perjury HGH trial, in which he admitted that his wife tried HGH. But as my buddy Hedge said, the person who had more to gain from HGH in the Clemens family than anybody, the guy who pitches and plays professional baseball for a living and makes $20 million a year, depending on how fast he throws a pitch.
Yes.
Somehow he decided to abstain from the HGH use. But his wife was right in there.
Yeah, his wife and his best friend were using it, but he stayed away.
Not for
me, thanks.
He lived vicariously through them.
That's right.
But back to Pettit, though.
I
don't want to say he's been lights out, but the lights are pretty dim. You can barely see in the room.
It's true. I mean, it's incredible because when I heard he was coming back on the opening day, I think it was the second day of the NCAA tournament, and I was leaving work to go watch the games with my buddies, and it was breaking news on the radio, and I was like, I didn't know quite what to think, because at that time the Yankees didn't seem to need starting pitching. Turned out he's been a savior, but who knew that at the time? But I mean, when a guy sits out for a year, you don't know what he's going to get. I mean, what you're going to get from him, and I wasn't really expecting much. And he's been just phenomenal. And it's not like you can claim it's a steroid thing, because he's not throwing 95 miles an hour out of the blue. I mean, he's been reincarnated as Jamie Moyer, as a crafty lefty, changing speeds, changing arm angles, and just mixing it up. But guys, he's made guys look silly. It's been great.
And you figure Michael Pineda out for the year.
Mm.
Phil Hughes can up and down. Is that fair?
Yeah, he's improved. He's improved lately.
Got better.
He's had a couple good starts in a row. Knock on wood. But yeah, he's definitely improved. But you know, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. He's not. He's not like a frontline lockdown starter. Certainly.
CC typical year.
Yeah, CC. You know, you can go take him to the bank.
Ivan Nova. Yeah.
Roller coaster again. Good record, but his ERA is an atrocity and really
great,
down.
Greatest closer of all time, not on the team.
Yeah.
Hasn't totally come back to haunt you.
No, and really they're starting pitching. Kuroda's been good lately. He's had a couple good starts in a row. He flirted with Destiny on Friday night against the Mets. And he had a really good start the start before that, too. So maybe he's coming around and figuring things out, which would be nice. The Yankees have been on a little streak here. They've won 8 of their last 10 games, and they've done it at a time when Jeter's ice cold. And Granderson was like, oh, I think Jeter and Granderson were combined like 1 for their last 33, and they're still winning games. That's a huge, huge sign for them.
And meanwhile, the Red Sox are kind of starting to slide the other way a little bit.
I know. A couple weekends ago, I think it was, the Sox were like a half game behind the Yankees, and expected the weekend the Sox were going to overtake them. And then since then, they've gone in opposite directions. The Yankees have opened up a nice little cushion against them. So
it was a discouraging weekend against the Nationals. I saw Saturday and I saw Sunday.
Yes.
And the Nationals have guys who can score from first base standing up on doubles and throw 100 miles an hour and it's exciting, and the Red Sox do not.
It's like the Rays, though. You know, when the Rays first came on, when you suck for 10 years and you have number one draft pick after number one draft pick, eventually that's all going to come to fruition and you're going to have a juggernaut. So that's what's happened with the Nationals, too.
Yeah, it's the old – it works for the NBA, and apparently it also works for baseball. You don't want to be in the middle. You want to really suck or you want to be good.
That's
and if you really suck and you continue to suck and you suck and you suck and you suck, eventually it's going to pay off.
Right, and it has. And they have Bryce Harper and Strasburg and Zimmerman. And, you know, they have a good young team, and they proved it.
I was impressed.
They're frisky.
I don't know enough about the Pirates to know if they qualify for that as well, but I know that they also – our young and talented team.
The Pirates may be the exception to the rule that we just talked about because they've sucked for like 25 years now or since Bonds left in like, what, 91?
Yeah, I know they've blown some picks.
They haven't really come through, although this year I know they're in first place now, but they haven't really they haven't really followed that rule of sucking enough and then eventually it comes to fruition.
It was a little sobering when the Celts got knocked out on Saturday night.
Mm.
All of a sudden just staring at 4 months of baseball, basically.
Yeah. I was almost going to tweet that and say, well, the silver lining is now that the Celtics season is over, Boston fans can focus on the Red Sox. But it was a little too cruel in the moment, you know, so I stayed away from that.
Yeah, when my dad and I were at dinner on Thursday night, and Buchholz was pitching. And he went through like the second inning unscathed, and we were like, Buchholz. And then both of us looked at each other and were like, God, this season sucks. Like, Buchholz gets two straight scoreless innings, and you're supposed to be excited about this. But, it's a really forgettable, 500 team. And what's interesting is the season ticket holders who normally could get rid of any seats they wanted. A combination of the fact that, the worms finally turned a little bit with Red Sox Nation and the pink hats, all that stuff. But also just sports in general, and the fact that it's people don't want to spend 5 hours driving to a baseball game and then going to it more than once or twice a year all of a sudden. The clusters of empty seats are really crazy. Like, there are empty seats, that part in Fenway, which great seats, by the way, and where the left field wall is, there's that one section right next to the wall.
Yeah.
Which is always packed because it's like a great place to get a foul ball. It's a really cool angle. And I mean, you're talking like 20 empty seats, like in a cluster.
But wait, I thought they have a sellout streak. It's the envy of all sports.
Well, it'd be very, very interesting to see if that's true or not. I mean, I'm sure somebody's just gone and tried to buy seats, right?
Oh, yeah. They Boston Globe had an expose about this a few weeks ago, where if you go to a game at like 9 o'clock, not only can you buy seats, they'll just give you the tickets. You go to the window and they say, here, just take them. Go ahead. I don't understand how that's a sellout.
You don't have to pay for them?
No. It was a big thing in the Boston Globe about how they went to different windows at like 9 or 9:30 of a 7 o'clock game.
Yeah.
It's like the sixth inning, seventh inning at that point. You went up and were like, a reporter went up and said, can I buy some tickets? And they're like, oh, here, just take them.
What's funny is that you read the Boston Globe more than I do, because and you hate read Boston.com every day.
I do. I absolutely do. It's when the Red Sox go on a winning streak, I actually get bummed out because I will not go to the Boston Globe sports at that point. It's only when they're losing and I can read all the hateful comments and it makes me happy, the schadenfreude. So,
Gonzalez needs to go.
Exactly. Or, trade proposals that are like Euclid for whoever, for Tim Lincecum straight up. I like to read those too.
Yeah, the Euclid thing is, he's clearly getting traded.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Dodgers are waiting for. I just keep assuming that trade's going to happen. I don't know what the holdup is. Just make it.
I was reading on Twitter or somewhere about how there's like 10 teams in the mix for Euclid, which I don't understand in the slightest, but.
Totally should be. I think he's the ultimate change of scenery guy.
He's going to take off once he goes, but I don't know.
100%.
I don't think he can combat being whatever he is on the other side of 30 and his body's breaking down, though.
Yeah, but you play him at first base.
Well, that'll help things, but I mean, and I know he's an OBP guy, but I'm not sure he's got any bat left when he actually has to swing and try to make contact.
Well, I mean, that's an issue, obviously.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, maybe the 686 OPS isn't enticing. I could see that. But I will say this as somebody who watches more of the Red Sox than he probably should, because it's such a, I don't know, an unfun season. He still has his eye.
Yeah.
Like even yesterday, he was down 1-2. He squeaked out a walk in the ninth inning. Like he can still work a pitcher and work a pitch count and all that. I think he's bummed out. I think my personal theory, I don't know for sure either way, but I think that whole clubhouse thinks he was the mole for some of that fried chicken and beer stuff or whatever. And I think it's just a weird thing. He's playing out of position. I think his body's starting to break down a little. I think it sucks to play in Boston, especially when you're on a 500 team like this.
Yeah.
And I think he needs a change of scenery. I really do. I think it's that simple. And I would absolutely trade for him if I were the Dodgers.
All right.
Because that guy's been in big games.
Yeah, no, he's done the crucible of the American League East, so he could go somewhere else and thrive, I suppose.
The biggest shocker of this Red Sox season was that this Daniel Bard as a starter experiment didn't work, because there were no signs at all that this wasn't going to work.
Right.
I just feel totally blindsided by the whole thing.
It's not like they could have looked to their biggest rival in Jabba Chamberlain to see what happened there. It's not like there wasn't exactly a path to follow, a script that you could see what was going to happen.
In all seriousness, it was probably the least surprising story from start to finish in the history of Boston sports. At no point during this entire thing did for a second I feel like Daniel Bard was going to be a good starter? Or did this decision make sense in any way?
Plus, he had a track record in the minors when he was a starter, and he was terrible at that. That's why they made him a reliever.
Control
issues. Baseball guys, they make guys a reliever for a reason. They know what they're doing. There's a reason they were made relievers.
Yes.
And you should just leave them there. And I realize it's tempting because the guy throws 99 or 100 miles an hour. Oh, my God, wouldn't it be great if he could do that over 8 innings instead of 1 inning? But it just doesn't work out that way. Some guys are made to be relievers. Yeah, it should have been a reliever. Bard should have been a reliever.
And some guys are not made to be closers, as Alfredo Aceves has proved.
That too, exactly.
He's meant to be a guy that comes in the fifth inning and throws 3 innings and saves your game when you're down 5-4 and you look back and you're like, oh, those are 3 great innings Alfredo threw.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and especially when you don't re-sign Papelbon and everybody says, oh, well, okay, now we're going to make Bard the closer, it all made perfect sense.
Well, they must have known.
I guess.
They must have known that whatever was going on with Bard was...
And now he's a complete basket case. I mean, he went down to the minor in Pawtucket, the minor leagues, and he hit like one of the first guys he faced. Walked like 3 guys in the first inning or something. So now he's like completely lost, you know?
Steve I was Trout. Enjoying that Bard and Mark Melancon were both in Pawtucket at the same time for about 48 hours before Melancon got hooked. But, I mean, not a good sign for the – if you told us in March that those guys would be on Pawtucket and it wouldn't be injury rehab.
Yeah.
You probably could have guessed that the team was going to go 500 this year.
That's true. 2 big offseason, you know, moves for their bullpen and starter. Yeah, that's not good.
I think – I don't know what the deal is with – you know, because I think the Celtics definitely – you know, took precedence because it was such a likable Celtics team. Now that the Celtics are out of it and we have, I don't know, probably like about 2 months before people really start talking about football. They're getting a little break from the Olympics, but for the next 5 weeks, it's going to be very intense dissection of this Red Sox team and the fan base and why do they keep pretending there's a sellout streak when there's not and is Adrian Gonzalez, is this one of the worst contracts? Like, there's all of those things are now going to become
all the focus
much
on
bigger.
Yeah, there's no Bruins. There's no Celtics anymore, right?
Because I don't think who the Celtics are going to take with the 21st and 22nd pick in the June draft is really going to capture the New England region.
No, probably not so much. Is a little part of you, speaking of the Celtics, a little part of you happy that you didn't have to disown Kevin Durant, that you didn't have to choose between the Celtics and Kevin Durant?
Oh, stop it. That never would have been a choice.
Little part of you is just happy about that, like having to choose like which one of your kids is your favorite.
I would have loved to have rooted against Kevin. It would have been an honor to root against such a terrific player.
But now you don't have to make that choice. You could probably wear your Durant jersey and root for them against the Heat. I assume you're rooting for Durant
jersey.
Against the Heat. No, I'm just kidding.
The Seattle thing is really tough for this series. I really feel terrible for the people in Seattle. I just think
it's gotta be brutal.
You knew this day was coming. There was no question that Oklahoma City was going to make it. But now that we're actually here, and they're the favorites, and it's just a bummer.
People tell me the Carolina Hurricanes won a Stanley Cup, but I don't believe that because I don't think that ever happened.
Yeah. So it's not great.
No.
But,
basically every American's duty to root against the Heat, though, isn't it?
It seems that way, because that's the other thing. If the Heat win, then the entire city of Cleveland goes into a coma.
Like,
either way, you're going to have a city just be traumatized. But
yeah, it's true.
I feel like I really despise this Miami team. Just as a fan, like I have a lot of sports hate for the Miami Heat right now.
Understandably.
Especially Wade, who I think had a crummy series and is the classic front runner, sticks his chest out as soon as the game is almost over and he made a jump shot.
Right.
He didn't used to be that kind of player, but I think he's gotten older and that's the kind of player he's slowly morphing into. So it's got, from that, I'm going to be more rooting against Miami than rooting for the former Seattle Sonics.
All right, that's fair.
How about you? What are you rooting for, Johnny?
Well, I'm going to root for the Thunder, I suppose, although it's kind of ridiculous to me that Oklahoma City has a professional sports franchise. But and I feel bad for Seattle because, the Supersonics were a good franchise, but I can't bring myself to root for the Heat. And partly it's because of, you know, the decision and the way they all, you know, all came together and all that,
yeah.
And, you know, were put together and all that. Pat Riley is involved. I don't care for Pat Riley.
Mm.
But also, you know, I mentioned this during the NBA All-Star game about this trend, and maybe it's in all sports because I think football guys do it too, but basketball, these guys where they wear like these Clark Kent glasses, and, which I don't understand in the slightest, like why you want to look like Urkel.
Yeah.
But then even more ridiculously, when the Heat lost what at the time seemed to be a pivotal game five, Wade is in the locker room after the game and he puts on the Clark Kent glasses. They don't even have glass in them.
Yeah.
I just don't understand, as like an adult, why I would wear like glasses that have no lenses, lensless glasses. Like, why would I put those on like it's Halloween?
Isn't the goal of all the fashion in the NBA playoffs to get people to talk about the NBA fashion in the NBA playoffs?
You think that's what it is?
Yeah.
Can you at least put, I'm going to go full Mad Dog here. Can you at least put glass in there? Can be clear glass?
Doug, there are no glasses in those lenses.
I mean, that just seems to be so asinine.
Doug, why would you get glasses if you don't have lenses? I don't get it.
If I had some, like, heartbreaking career thing where things didn't go well in my career and then I, like, left work and I was wearing a wig for no apparent reason,
yeah.
I don't understand why that would make any sense. You lose game five, you're the Heat, you're going to win five or six championships, allegedly, according to the press conference.
Yeah.
I just lost the heartbreaking game five. Let me put on my lensless Clark Kent glasses. They'll make me feel better as an adult.
The other thing that was really interesting was Wade talked about how he had a stylist.
God.
For the press conferences. He has somebody that, I forget, they were talking about in one of the games. So the stylist sends all of Dwayne's outfits for, you know, that series. So he's like, here are the six things you're going to wear during the press conferences, Dwayne.
Jesus.
And Dwayne says, thank you, stylist.
Oh, my God.
In game four, I have you in a nice little Azad getup. Oh, that sounds great, stylist.
I'd like to be put on retainer by some NBA player. I'll offer my services, and I will give him advice like, make sure your fake glasses have fake lenses in them.
Yeah. So for game five, we're going to take out the lenses, Dwayne. I just feel I like the momentum of the no lenses for the last two games.
Here's my advice. You know, a lot of guys go with the glasses, but how about if you go with the full Groucho glasses with the nose mustache? Really mix it up a little bit. What should
put
those on after the game?
How could somebody get to the point in their life when they're a man and they have a stylist?
Well, that's a good question, too. And LeBron has, like, his little, like, pocketbook that he carries to games. That's troubling.
I get it for, like, I'm going to the Academy Awards. I'm George Clooney.
You're right.
Or, like, I have a run coming up. I'm going to four different awards, and I'm going to three charity benefits, and I don't know what's in because I've been busy. I'm making a movie. I'm going to hire a stylist for the next couple months just to, you know, make sure I don't look like an idiot. But if there's a stylist listening that wants to start dressing me,
yeah,
I'm all for it. Maybe there's something to this. David Cho of Grantland.
Like, can you imagine if we were in college though, and like we're gonna go out to a party, and one of our buddies put on black like Urkel glasses with no lenses?
Right.
I mean, would we be like, what the hell are you doing? What are you wearing those things for? You
and
look
like,
ridiculous.
With like a fuchsia sweater.
Yeah, exactly.
And corduroys.
Yeah, I just don't get it. I don't know. It's over my head. I mean, maybe, I don't know. Maybe it'll be a trend sweeping the nation. Glasses.
It's really,
no lenses.
This is where Larry Bird has really failed America, because he's the one guy who would call all these guys out and do the grumpy old man Dana Carvey routine.
Right.
Back in my day, we just threw on a dress shirt.
Well, not even. Back in his day, Larry Bird's stylist was like, go with the red flannel shirt instead of the blue one.
Grow your wispy mustache about an inch longer.
Right.
It really has changed.
It's just ridiculous. Oh, my God.
Who do you think is going to be the breakout stylist to the finals?
I don't know. I've got to look at my stylist pool, see who I like in that one.
Russell Westbrook seems like he's willing to push the envelope the most just to try to get on the sports blogs the most.
Well, James Harden has that beard thing going, right? So I don't know if that really counts as a style, but
I got a great email that I've been saving for a mailbag that, of course, I haven't written about. Somebody theorizing that if James Harden's beard wasn't real,
Wow.
And it came off during a game. Would that be the greatest moment in the history of YouTube?
It would be up there.
Can you imagine if it came off? It turned out he couldn't grow one. He was like Dustin Brown on the Kings. He could barely put together 10 whiskers. That would be pretty good. I don't totally understand the beard thing.
I would think it would be uncomfortable. Like, you're hot and sweaty. It would be itchy. That would drive me nuts.
I think when you live in Oklahoma City, you just kind of lose your mind.
Yeah, there's not a lot to do, I imagine. So.
Yeah, I think these guys, they smell the Purina.
I'm just curious if we've angered in this podcast. We've angered stylists in Oklahoma City, so that's fine.
I like Oklahoma City. I went there 18 months ago. It was awesome. It was a great place. It was like very throwback, old school, cool place to see a basketball game. I just wonder if I'm James Harden.
Yeah.
What I would do there after living there for 3-4 years. I guess those guys are just used to it.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't even know, like, what the nearest big city is to Oklahoma City. Like, is it close to Dallas?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I know that, it would certainly be a little different to play out here. Like, I know when they stayed in L.A. when they were playing the Lakers, that they stayed on the beach.
Nice.
And I can imagine, like, if I'm on that team and I went from living in Oklahoma City to all of a sudden I'm in this hotel that, you know, on the beach.
Mm.
You must start thinking, like, counting down your free agency, at least in your head a little bit. You're choosing at that point between titles and – I think that's why Lamar Odom went crazy.
Yeah, because he got sent from L.A. to Dallas.
I think Lamar Odom needs the Pacific Ocean. He's almost like one of those superheroes that he needs certain elements. Yeah, he needs the smell of the ocean or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, we're rambling. Last thing, Mad Men.
Yeah. I was a little underwhelmed by the finale.
Spoiler alert. So we're going to end the podcast with Johnny right after this quick Mad Men thing. So if you haven't watched Mad Men yet, just turn off the podcast because you're not going to miss anything. I was underwhelmed as well.
And I think maybe the reason I was underwhelmed is because the two episodes leading up to the finale were so good.
Yeah.
With Peggy leaving and then with Lane committing suicide. So those were like blockbuster episodes.
Yeah.
And so well done. That I think in my mind I had built it up that, my God, if they've done these two like leading up to the finale is going to be like explosive, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was, so that, in that sense, it was kind of like I kept waiting for something explosive to happen. But I think that maybe they had sort of, like, exploded early, so to speak.
It's premature.
Who among us has it? That happened a couple episodes before the finale, you know?
It was a premature showrunner ejaculation.
Exactly.
I think Matthew Weiner, he was like, wow, two great ones. Wait, I mean, how do you top yourself for the season finale? And he's like, you know what? I'm going to kind of mail in the season finale, but it's going to end with the hint of Don Draper banging women again.
Exactly.
And everybody's going to be fine with it.
Exactly.
Everybody's going to be all in as soon as Don Draper gets that look on his face.
I know. I chuckled for like a good 2 minutes after it was over because Ham was so good. The look on his face when he turned to look at her was brilliant.
Yeah. He liked Megan because Megan was just this awesome, supportive, you know, relatively modern, classy woman who just really loved to please him.
Right.
And just wanted to fill in all the blanks in Don Draper's life.
Right.
So he marries her. They move to this awesome apartment. And then things start to shift. And all of a sudden, she wants to be an actress. And she's not that interested in filling in the blanks for Don Draper anymore.
And I think the thing he loved about her the most was not just that she filled in all the blanks in every other aspect of his life, but also in work too. Like, they could work together, and she hit it out of the park with the pitch that they had to do for the product. And he was like, oh my God, she's like this perfect wife, and she's into advertising as I am. And then she like yanked the rug out from under him because he keeps throwing back in her face about how she hates advertising. And I can't believe you want to be in a commercial because you hate advertising.
Yeah.
She really blindsided him with that. And now she's like, wants to be an actress. And so he's like, I've been a good husband and I was, you know, going to be there for her. But now that she's left me, throwing my hat back in the ring in a big way.
I fully support it.
Absolutely.
Do you think, Don Draper?
Yeah, the ending was great in the bar with the look on his face. He takes the drag on the cigarette. Oh, my God.
I think the season finale is going to become underrated because I also loved every scene with Roger Sterling and the French mom.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Even at the end when Roger's like naked with the whole city in front of him looking out the window, that was fantastic too.
I think that the scenes that really fell short for me, and it almost went one scene too long, was the Pete Campbell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think he just, I think you get out of that. I know how to do a TV show, but I think you just get out of there with Pete Campbell sitting down and then realizing that the girl has no idea who he is. I didn't need him to then do the whole 3-minute summary of his friend who,
right,
you know,
yeah.
And he's, it was like too blatant. I thought that was too blatant. I agree with Alan Sepinwall. That was too blatant. The tooth metaphor was like, really, all right, we get it.
Yeah.
He's got a tooth and it's a metaphor for all the bad things in his life that needs to be pulled.
Right.
I don't know. It wasn't on the level, I didn't feel like, of the other ones from an intellectual standpoint.
I also thought that the punch that the conductor on the train threw at Pete Campbell was the worst fake punch I've ever seen on screen.
Yeah, I'm going to call Pete Campbell for flopping.
I think it was a total flop, and I wonder if they were just like, it was the end of the day, and they're like, ah, close enough, you know, print it. I think it was like they could have gone one more take where the guy sold it a little more.
We're having a battery issue. Is it all right if we run with that one?
Yeah, exactly. The conductor, I didn't believe the punch. I didn't believe it knock him down. It just was pretty pseudo to me.
And then the other one was, you know, the girl Pete loved, the girl from the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Who, this was her breakout as an adult dramatic actress, I guess.
Right.
She just wasn't that good. But it was not a very pretty, but not a strong character. I didn't feel like, or not a strong performance. I just didn't, was never really sold on that whole storyline.
No, and then he instantly, like, fell head over heels in love with her, like, immediately, and I don't know.
Do you think, my favorite part of the whole season was when Lane threw out the bikini thing at Joan.
Yeah.
Totally underrated, and it's been lost in the shuffle of a great season.
Right.
Lane was like, I'm going to kill myself anyway. I might as well give this a run.
Drunken blaze of glory.
I also like that they had so much fun with how bad of a car Jaguar was back
in
the day.
Yeah, that was great. It wouldn't even start when he tried to kill himself with it.
Because that was like a joke for 30 years. Was
oh, right.
Never get a Jaguar. It's, yeah, it'll always break down.
It's supposed to come with a screwdriver because you're going to need it, yeah.
So it ended in 1967.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe that maybe they come back in it could be 68 with Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah.
Or it could be 69, like the moon landing I think was Woodstock 69? It was,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Maybe you come back that summer. It'll be interesting to see when it starts.
Now, when's it going to be on? Or is it going to be like another 3 years before it's on again? Or?
No, because they came it'll be a year.
Settled their issues or whatever.
And then what do you do about Draper's sideburns? Like once you move into the 70s, that's going to be a very important decision.
Absolutely. Well, he's a man of his time, though. He just may become like anachronism, you know, so he doesn't quite fit in with the fashions of the day. He doesn't have a stylist, Don Draper.
I didn't tell you this, but my wife and I have started watching Game of Thrones.
Really?
7 episodes in. It's excellent.
Have you been watching Justified?
No, that's next. You watched Game of Thrones, Johnny?
No, it's like, come on, it's like Dungeons and Dragons.
Johnny?
I should step in with Game of Thrones.
As a fan, as a longtime fan of the days when women looked like women pre-implants.
Yeah, I should step in.
I just for that reason alone, you might want to step in.
All right, I'll look for it on demand then.
I would watch.
Was it on HBO?
Yeah, they're all on demand right now. I would watch the first two. It's confusing. There's a lot of characters. You'll immediately like the perverted little guy.
Okay.
But yeah, I would go first two and just make sure force yourself to watch the first two.
I've never been like a Lord of the Rings. I've never seen the Lord of the Rings. I never played Dungeons and Dragons. I was never into any of that stuff. So that's
you're
not
preaching
really
to the choir, Johnny.
What's that?
You're preaching to the choir. I don't like the forest. I don't like, as I've said on the podcast, I don't like to go in the forest.
Exactly.
If the forest is involved, I'm out.
Yeah, I don't want to be alive in the Middle Ages. I'm happy to be alive where I am now. I don't want to be a knight.
Listen, I've known you since 1988. You took it personally when I talked about the longest relationships of my life on Twitter that you weren't one of them.
Yes.
But I had not included friends or immediate family for that. I guarantee you like Game of Thrones. And and I'd like to thank Mark Lasanti and Andy Greenwald and all the other people at Grantland who basically made me feel like a total loser until I started watching it.
All right, I'll check it out. I'll give it a shot.
Worst case scenario, there's a lot of nudity.
Well, that's never a bad scenario. So. Come for the breasts, stay for the dragons.
All right, Johnny. We will talk to you a little bit later in the month when
Sounds good. When
I'm staring at a 500 Red Sox season and getting increasingly depressed.
I look forward to it.
All right.
All right, see ya. Bye-bye.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.